Dr. Sajid Virk is a research biochemist who gained his PhD at the University of Birmingham. His experience of working in both the pharmaceutical industry and the NHS led him to change his views on the role of drugs and nutrition in health and disease. He reinvented himself, as it were, to become a nutrition consultant. He now works in Berkshire, and I went to see him at his home there to ask him first why so many of us suffer from so many different diseases.
Well, Martin, there are in fact a few specific diseases that I have as specific disease conditions. Now, when an individual or a group of people show certain symptoms, we give those symptoms a collective name. For example, a person suffering from inflammation, we say that person has arthritis. Mm-hmm. But the reason for that inflammation could be manifold. And I think that's really the question that we should be addressing. Now, let's have a look at some of those conditions that that influence on a day-to-day basis. What about the typical modern diet with the abundance of processed food that we all eat? Well, that some of us eat, I should say. That's much to blame. Often that food is void of nutrients. The modern lifestyle, the stress that we suffer in several ways. I'm sure you've sat in a traffic jam and really felt stressful.
I certainly have.
Yeah. The problems that most of us have at work. And what about those financial challenges? Now, all of these, the stress that it causes, will impact our health in a major way. And then there, of course, the environment. All the pollutants, the herbicides, the pesticides, the tens of thousands of chemicals that man has introduced, the pollutants in the air that we breathe, the water that we drink. All of this causes what I call toxic overload. And drugs. Now, when people succumb to illness, they go to the doctor. Often the first thing they receive is a short course of drugs. Now, I do believe there is a role of drugs in medicine, but in the main it should be confined to accident and emergency.
Mm-hmm.
And those drugs often aggravate the course. They have so many different side effects. They are, after all, poisons. Or they simply shift the symptoms. And they also, of course, add further toxic overload. And then we come to another culprit, which is responsible, it is believed, for over 60 different disease conditions, and that is called a free radical.
So what is a free radical, Sajid?
Well, in very simple terms, a free radical is an atom or a molecule which has an unpaired electron. It is very short-lived, it's unstable, and it has very high energy. And it doesn't want to stay in that condition for very long. Basically, it looks for a partner, another atom, another molecule. And this other atom or molecule could be a part of your body. It could be a piece of your DNA, your genetic material. It could be a protein. It could be a fat molecule. But that free radical is looking to steal an electron from your body so that it can become stable.
So where do these free radicals come from then, Sajid?
Many sources. In fact, free radicals actually created in our own bodies by certain biochemical processes. For example, in the making of energy in our body, something called ATP, in that process, reactions take place called redox reactions, and they generate an enormous amount of free radicals. Also, they actually serve a purpose sometimes in our body. For example, the immune cells, the white cells, they actually create free radicals, in fact, hydrogen peroxide, which then damage invading bacteria and also kill viruses. So they actually do play a useful role as well. But where it comes to be a problem is that free radicals are generated from our environment, from the pollution that I've already mentioned, from radiation, from bright sunlight. The UV in sunlight has enough energy.
That's the ultraviolet.
The ultraviolet, mm-hmm. Right. That has enough energy to knock off electrons from the fats within your cell membranes, the phospholipids, because the electrons of phospholipids are of such low energy, loosely bound, they can be knocked off. And they themselves then become free radicals and can do some damage. In fact, they can set up what's called a chain reaction with subsequent molecules, each pinching an electron from the next molecule. So a whole chain reaction of free radicals can occur. And fried foods also have chemicals in them which initiate free radicals. So many, many sources can generate free radicals, both within our own body and within the atmosphere.
So all this has a great deal to do, does it, with why we succumb to disease?
Certainly. Before we come to that, let's just look at the molecular mechanism, if you like. The free radicals may damage your DNA, part of your genetic makeup. They might damage certain proteins. These proteins may be a crucial enzyme in your body. They might damage the fats, the phospholipid fats, which form part of your membranes. And those membranes, once they are damaged and disrupted, that can cause a chemical imbalance in your body and cause chemical stress. And that is basically the beginning of cellular damage. And it can trigger off many diseases. If I can just mention a few of those diseases. Cancer, for example. Chronic inflammatory disorders, such as rheumatoid arthritis. Arterial damage, which can lead to cardiovascular disease. Aging. Now, aging is, of course, inevitable, but may in part be due to the long-term effects of not quite meeting what is called oxidative stress. That is the damage that free radicals do. Not quite meeting that sufficiently. And then, of course, there's diabetes. They are also implicated in diabetes. Cataracts, multiple sclerosis, MS, and about 50 other conditions.
You mean to say that the free radical is responsible for this huge area of problem?
Absolutely. The research has been accumulating over the last 30 years, well documented.
So how can we avoid free radical damage when, you know, this pollution and so on and is coming at us from so many directions all the time?
I don't think we can actually totally avoid free radical damage. Yes, there are some things we can control. The fact is they are not only within our bodies, but within the air that we breathe. So we can't totally control free radical damage. However, the body has awesome powers. It has means to protect itself against free radical damage. And what it has are things called antioxidants. Now, a free radical, I've already described, is something that steals electrons. That is the process of oxidation. And there are prime examples. For example, if you slice an apple in half or bite into it, leave it to the open air, it'll go brown. That is the process of oxidation. Rubber tubing, when that perishes, that is a form of oxidation, free radical damage. Even the drying of paint or varnish, that is in fact a free radical oxidation reaction.
It's a bit like rusting, is it?
A bit like rusting. That's also a form of oxidation. Mm. And our body has enzyme systems which act as antioxidants. They can actually quench the free radicals. In other words, they are antioxidants. And they do this one of several different ways. They can actually donate electrons to the free radical, thereby stabilizing it, or they can simply repair the damage that has been done by free radicals. As I said, the chemicals capable of disarming free radicals are called antioxidants. Some of these are actually essential nutrients, like vitamins A, vitamin C, and vitamin E, that act as antioxidants in their own right. And some of these would include selenium, and other minerals actually support the very enzymes that we've just mentioned. For example, glutathione peroxidase actually requires selenium to be effective, and SOD requires zinc, requires copper and manganese and a small amount of iron to fully function.
So what you're saying is that minerals depend on vitamins and vitamins depend on minerals to actually operate properly.
Yes, they are cofactors. That's what purpose vitamins and minerals serve in our body. They are cofactors. Sometimes, yes, they work in their own right, but often they act in conjunction with the enzymes. And enzymes are simply biological catalysts that have a function in the body.
Do we become more susceptible to free radical damage as we get older?
Yes, there is truth in that. Generally speaking, the level of enzymes in our body, for example, digestive enzymes, do decrease with age. As we all know, people get indigestion, start getting indigestion in their 40s, 50s. But also, antioxidant enzymes also decrease. It's believed that the levels of antioxidant enzymes in a person of 50 years age are about 50% of those in a child. So clearly your antioxidant capacity decreasing with age. So clearly with age your capacity to fight the free radicals is drastically reduced.
There really is a huge difference then between being 70 and being, say, 10 in terms of the free radical damage in the body.
There certainly is, but there is something that you can do about it. What happens under those circumstances is that if you think about the oxidative stress that you are undergoing on the one side due to free radical damage, balanced on the other side by the antioxidants, there is a balance towards free radical damage.
Yes.
And basically what the body's trying to do is simply try to prevent itself going rancid from the inside. And that is a battle, unfortunately, that it often loses. And what aging really is not quite meeting the antioxidant levels required to overcome oxidative stress.
So is that actually why we all get wrinkles as we get older? I mean, the skin is affected, the whole body's affected, but it shows in the skin.
Certainly. In fact, just to name you a few, the early signs of free radical damage, wrinkles is one of them, frequent infections, easy bruising, fatigue, generally feeling groggy, and really a reduced ability to detoxify the body. Again, our body produces toxins. The liver detoxifies those poisons. But free radical damage actually creates more toxins, puts more load on the liver, and that in turn leads to more oxidative radicals. So it's a cycle, if you like, and to try to break that cycle in some way. And that is, we have to try to increase the antioxidant capacity of the body.
So how do we do that, Surjit? Is it with supplements, or how do we do it?
Well, it's certainly that a similar lot of people who, either through ignorance and or scepticism, still believe that we should get all the antioxidants that we need in the food that we eat. And that's simply not the case. Let's look at the minerals, first of all, the antioxidant minerals. Now, because of intensive farming, the same land being farmed for 50 years or more, now, those plants, of course, are taking those minerals from the soil.
Mm-hmm.
But those same minerals are not being replenished. They're not being put back into the soil. So clearly, the foods do not contain the minerals that our body requires. And regarding the vitamins, the overcooking of food will destroy those vitamins. Most of the vitamins are not heat stable. Or if you boil your vegetables, they will be leached out. So basically, the way that we cook foods, the way they are processed, also destroys vitamins. And even the so-called fresh vegetables in the supermarkets, if they are out of season, then they may have been sitting in storehouses for several months. For example, an orange may lose up to 5% of its vitamin C content per day. So on that reasoning, within 20 days or so of being picked, the orange may contain no vitamin C at all. And also, there is a tendency to pick fruits before they are even ripe.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't have the full complement of vitamins that they would have had they been allowed to ripen on the tree itself.
I mean, we get bananas when they're completely green, don't we?
Completely green. There are still, of course, those that believe that food contains the necessary vitamins and minerals required for antioxidant activity. Those people are either ignorant or skeptical. And when the very people who are supposed to be looking after our health are ignorant and skeptical, then that is of major concern. Certainly, the only way to ensure health is to take antioxidants in supplement form.
So what sort of supplements do we need to take? What sort of antioxidant supplements do we need to take to keep in the best of health?
Well, there really is a broad spectrum, if you like, of antioxidants. We've already spoken briefly about the vitamins A, C and D.
Mm-hmm.
But more and more antioxidants are being found in nature all the time, including substances in berries, in tomatoes, and in herbs such as turmeric and ginkgo biloba. Now, these antioxidants are called bioflavonoids. They are not essential to life, but they are extremely beneficial. And another subclass of bioflavonoids are things called oligomeric proanthocyanidins, or OPCs for short. So there's a whole range of different antioxidants that we can actually supplement with. The OPCs are 20 times more effective than vitamin C at quenching free radicals.
Where do OPCs come from then?
Well, OPCs are found in many different types of plants, but in particular, from a commercial point of view, from grapeseed extract, and also from the maritime pine bark. Those are the major two sources of OPCs.
That's the maritime pine tree, in fact.
That's right. It grows predominantly in southern France. Mm.
So that takes us actually right back to the beginning of this tape, doesn't it? The story about the scurvy.
It certainly does. Mm. And the OPCs, not only are they antioxidants in their own right, but they have served many other functions as well. They bind to toxic metals and literally escort them out of the body. They work with vitamin C in what I call a synergistic way. They enhance the activity of vitamin C. They are also bacteriostatic. That means basically that they prevent bacterial growth. They are also anti-carcinogenic, and they strengthen capillary walls. So they have many, many functions, many benefits.
And preventing cancer, of course, is a very big benefit indeed for people, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Mm. Can we, in fact, Sergio, take too much antioxidant? I mean, why don't we just simply take vitamin C and be done with it, for instance?
Yes, vitamin C, it's a potent antioxidant. It's water-soluble. So when we take it in, it's going to migrate to those parts of the body where there is water. Vitamin E, vitamin A, beta-carotene, these are fat-soluble. And they will basically be found in the fatty tissue of the body. For example, the cell membranes, which really are layers of phospholipids.
What's a phospholipid?
Phospholipid is just a type of fat, right, basically, and it forms the cell membrane.
Mm-hmm.
And, for example, vitamin A, or beta-carotene, protects deep inside the phospholipids of the membrane. Vitamin E acts as a free radical scavenger on the surface of fat molecules. Vitamin C, on the other hand, acts in the aqueous, or watery part, of cells, both within the cell and outside of the cell. So they do have different functions. In fact, it has been shown experimentally that vitamin E more efficiently suppresses oxidative damage of membranes than the water-soluble vitamin C, which, as I say, more readily quenches aqueous radicals. So there are differences.
So it seems to me that we actually need a pretty wide range of supplements, in fact.
Yes, we do. Even the OPCs, for example, there's a component of the grapeseed extract is actually fat-soluble, whereas the OPCs from pine bark are actually water-soluble. So again, applying the same rationale, we would be improving our protection if we were to take a mixture of OPCs from different sources rather than from just one source. So the grapeseed extract OPCs would migrate to the fatty parts of the tissue. The OPCs from pine bark would protect the watery parts of our body. So there is a good rationale to having a broad spectrum of antioxidants. Ginkgo biloba, for example, the phytosomes from ginkgo biloba are known to enter or cross the blood-brain barrier. And this is why it has a role to play, for example, in Alzheimer's disease. It can afford protection to the brain. Ginkgo biloba has other properties, again, a reason for having a broad spectrum of antioxidants. So they not only act as antioxidants, they are anti-inflammatory. They also improve peripheral circulation. So a broad spectrum antioxidant would be a better idea.
Do you think it's realistic, Sergio, for people to take all this range of supplements, in fact? I mean, are people going to actually do that?
Well, I think there are so many antioxidants that you couldn't get everything into one tablet. You couldn't take all the antioxidants that are being discovered. But the idea should be to have a range of antioxidant, preferably in one formula. And if you need to take additional amounts of certain vitamins, of certain minerals, then take additional amounts in separate tablets, if you like. But ideally, choose a good formula with a mixture, an array of different antioxidants, including OPCs, including maybe ginkgo biloba, and something I haven't even mentioned yet, curcuminoids. Now, curcuminoids, in the form of turmeric, if you like, which is where they come from, have been used in ancient India for thousands of years.
That's the stuff that goes into curry, isn't it?
Absolutely. Now, curcuminoids, of course, are extracted from curcumin and are very, very potent. I think you'd have to have many teaspoonfuls of turmeric powder to have the same effect. And these have been shown to be three times more potent as free radical quenchers, if you like, than the OPCs. And any good modern-day antioxidant formula should contain curcuminoids as well. So basically, it makes sense, even with the OPCs, to include them as antioxidants from different sources. Now, for this reason, because they serve different functions in different parts of the body, they can, of course, have a role to play, a beneficial role, in different diseases, which may be different tissue-based, for example. There's plenty of evidence linking, for example, a low intake of antioxidants with a high incidence of disease. Lots of correlations. For example, aging is associated with impaired immunity. And there is an increase in illness due to infections in the elderly. That's well known. It has been shown that supplementation with antioxidants and trace minerals reduces illness due to infection. It's been suggested by some that neurodegenerative diseases, such as Alzheimer's dementia, involve oxidative stress due to free radicals. And supplementation with antioxidants may be a way to delay or prevent Alzheimer's. Now, coming to vitamin E, it was shown in a study at Cambridge University, it was published in 1996, that vitamin E at just 400 IU resulted in a 50% less heart attacks in those with advanced heart disease. Also, it's been shown to improve macular degeneration of the eyes. Vitamin E also enhances insulin action and reduces diabetic complications. Vitamin E boosts immunity. It has all these different functions. And generally speaking, vitamin A works with vitamin E, as I've already said, and has similar benefits. Now, vitamin C. Vitamin C is known to at least influence 100 different enzyme reactions in the body. And ideally, one should use a sterified vitamin C. It simply means it will stay in the body longer. It has a prolonged lifetime within the body. And if it's going to be working with the OPCs, that makes good sense. This influences over 100 known enzyme reactions in the body. It's known to benefit cataracts, asthma, high cholesterol, heart disease, lung disease, other smoking-related conditions as well. And as I said, it works with the OPCs to strengthen the capillary walls. And just that alone will have many far-reaching benefits. OPCs, they've been shown to have positive effects on blood vessels because of their very potent antioxidant effect, up to 20 times more effective as free radical scavengers than vitamin C. So it's likely that OPCs may therefore help in diabetes, in retinopathy, and in coronary artery disease.
Well, you've been talking quite a bit about OPCs, Sergeant. What sort of dosage of OPCs should we be taking for best benefit then?
Assuming good bioavailability, that means absorption into the body itself, one should be looking to supplement with about 120 milligrams of OPCs on a daily basis. And that could be split into two separate dosages, say of 60 milligrams each. However, one thing to note is when you first start taking the OPCs, it's actually well to saturate your body with OPCs by taking twice that amount for a period of about 3 or 4 days. So for the first 3 or 4 days, take basically two doses, each dose being of 120 milligrams, first thing in the morning, and then in the evening. And then once saturation of the body tissues has been attained, you can go down to the maintenance dose, which would be just the 120 milligrams per day. Now that would be for an average size person. If you are particularly on the heavy side, you might choose to take an additional 60 milligrams.
And that's really going to make a difference to your life and your health, is it, if you're an older person?
It certainly should do. Remember, we've already said that your antioxidant capacity in that age group is very much compromised, so it should make a tremendous difference. However, I will say this, that some people will notice a difference within 3 or 4 days. For other people, it might take 3 weeks, and for yet others, it may take 3 months. Mm. Now, it depends upon the level of health that you currently enjoy, or not enjoy, as the case may be. So some people do achieve dramatic results. I've had many cases where that has been reported, and it's delightful to hear that. But you've got to give yourself a chance to be on this for a minimum of 3 months before you may experience the benefits. The idea, of course, is that you maintain that dosage for life if you want to ensure protection.
What about younger people, though, Sergeant? I mean, when should you start this? Are you a believer in prevention rather than cure? I mean, starting when you're really quite young and carrying on from an earlier age?
Yes, we are talking about prevention. The onset of certain diseases or certain disease conditions actually starts at a very early age. Of course, we only start noticing the symptoms maybe in our 30s, 40s, and 50s. There's evidence that even atherosclerosis, that's the deposit of plaque, if you like, in the arteries, can start as early as 10 years of age. So we are talking here about prevention using antioxidants, and children, teenagers, adults, and the elderly should all be taking antioxidants for that protection. There is one thing to note here, that when people start taking the OPCs and antioxidant formulae, they may experience what some people call a detoxification reaction or a detox reaction. I prefer to call it a healing reaction. And that is actually a good sign. Some people report mild headaches. They might report slight abdominal discomfort or maybe a slight skin rash as well. As I say, that's actually a good sign. It means that what the antioxidants are actually doing are releasing toxins from the body tissues, toxins which may have accumulated in the tissues over several months or even years. And the antioxidants do have a detoxifying effect. They liberate toxins from tissues. And as these toxins float in the bloodstream, then of course they are going to cause these symptoms. And you can't totally avoid that. As I say, it's a good sign. What you can do is to flush those toxins out and take copious amounts of water. Not everybody experiences it, but some people do, and it's well to actually look out for that. So copious amounts of water, maybe 6 to 8 glasses of filtered water, should basically reduce those symptoms. It's a good sign. It's well to remember that.
Not something to worry about, therefore.
Certainly not, no. Also, it is well to supplement with a multivitamin, a good multivitamin, multi-mineral, and to ensure adequate amount of trace minerals, because everything works together. Nothing works in isolation. And remember those enzymes that we talked about earlier, the GP, the catalase, the superoxide dismutase, they require minerals to function. So as well as the antioxidant formula, it is actually essential to have a multivitamin, multi-mineral as well.
Sergeant, can supplements, in fact, be classed as medicines?
Well, no, Martin, they are definitely not medicines. They're simply supplements for the nutrients that should be in our food anyway. And as you know, sadly, in the modern world, that's just not so. Let me leave you with a thought. You know the old saying about an apple a day?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it said in the Middle Ages, a single apple may well have given your daily antioxidant nutrients. It's a rather different picture today.
If you would like to know more, just get back to the person who gave you this tape. The information given in this tape is for educational purposes only. If you have any questions as to the appropriateness of this information in regards to your own health, please consult a qualified healthcare professional.